Hello, everybody, and welcome to minute 94 of season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Mark Hoffmeyer of Movies, Films, and Flicks. Welcome back, Mark.
I would appreciate it if you just called me Tower during this episode. Like, hey, Tower. Tower.
Hey, everyone, do you believe the ball's on this guy?
Hey, I need a ground crew to come and check out my microphone before we start.
Hey, you're quite capable of checking out your microphone on your own.
Oh, I can't get hostages now.
That's right.
I am, though. I am wearing a night vision thing, and I'm wearing a flak jacket and a bulletproof vest.
And do you have snow on the side of your jacket?
Right shoulder.
Okay. Well, actually, left shoulder. That's right. So, minute 94 begins with John checking his ammo clip and ends with Grant giving orders to his men. So, yesterday we ended things off with John doing a death-defying feat. I was actually thinking about that. And I'm assuming you're familiar with Evel Knievel.
Yeah.
So he reminded me like of Evel Knievel with the type of stuff that he was doing there. You know, just jumping over, you know, I could see Evel Knievel doing that. Jumping over, you know, a truck with a flaming snowmobile.
He hasn't done that?
Not that I'm aware of.
How many trucks could he clear if you lined them up? And he had a good ramp and he had a fast snowmobile. How many trucks do you think he could jump?
Do you actually want the answer to that? Because I have it. I have the answer.
Yeah, let me know.
Okay, well, first of all, for anyone who doesn't know who we're talking about, I guess you can call him a stuntman. He was a stunt performer and entertainer named Robert Craig Knievel, who was known as Evel Knievel, E-V-E-L. I never understood why.
I mean,
I don't understand why he was called Evel, because it's not Evel, E-V-I-L.
When did he start?
Well, he was born in 1938, and throughout his career, he had more than 75 ramp-to-ramp motorcycle jumps.
Hmm. I mean, it was quite conservative back then. So if you add the I in there, people are like, I'm not going to go watch an evil person do something, right? They're not going to be like, who's this evil person? Oh, no, it's an E. It's not an I. It just rhymes. He's not really evil. Oh, okay, that's fine.
That's right, Dr. Evel.
He was maybe getting ahead of potential complaints by being like, I'm not evil because I have an E and not an I.
That's what I would do. I mean, I tried looking up to figure out why he was called Evel, and I never was able. He adopted that as his nickname, but it didn't really say like what it means, you know. Evel. I don't know.
He just sounds good. Evel Knievel.
Yeah.
It's better than Hank, or it's better than Roger Knievel.
Rob Knievel, you know, you're right.
Mark Knievel. Mark Knievel.
Right. Mark Knievel, maybe.
Mark Knievel.
Bless you. So his most famous stunt was an attempt to jump the fountains at Caesar's Palace, which he didn't manage to do. He never was able to do it. He tried a few times, but he broke hundreds of bone fractures throughout his career. Most of the time, he would just land incorrectly and just break bones. But people just really liked the fact that he was attempting. You know, he even tried jumping across the Snake River Canyon, and you know the parachute that he had malfunction, and he got injured from it. I mean, it's just unbelievable the number of injuries this guy had over his career. But he does have some of the biggest records. You know, of these type of things. First of all, he set a sales record at the Houston Astrodome in 1971 because he sold over 100,000 tickets on back-to-back performances.
Wow.
In 1971, he also set the world record for jumping cars. How many cars do you think he jumped over with his motorcycle?
45.
19. And do you know how many years that record stood? 19. Remember, this is 1971, 27 years.
Wow. Who beat it?
A man named Bubba Blackwell, who jumped 20 cars in 1998.
Wow.
And then in 2015, a guy named Doug Danger surpassed that with 22 cars.
Jeez Louise.
And he actually used Evel Knievel's Harley Davidson to break that record in 2015. So that's even cooler, you know, the fact that he was able to do that.
What would your stuntman name be, Rob?
Ooh.
Stuntman Rob? Because your movie, Rob.
Probably. Yeah, that would probably make sense. But that reminds me too much of what's his name, Stuntman Mike. So I don't know. I'm not that evil.
Oh yeah, you're not death proof.
That's right. That's a good point. So how many he was able to jump across 19 cars. Now what do you think the highest number of stacked cars he was able to get over?
Highest number of stacked cars?
Yes.
13.
50. I'm like, I was shocked when I saw this. He was able to jump over 50 cars. And how many years do you think that lasted? His other record lasted for 27 years. How many years do you think this record lasted for?
32.
35. You're very good. Hey. You were close. That was, that's just absurd.
the record's for a reason, because they're wildly impressive and very athletic, but no one else would even want to attempt it.
That's true. So he also is in the Guinness Book of World Records for the survivor of the most broken bones in a lifetime.
It's amazing.
And how many broken bones do you think he had?
Honestly, you said he had hundreds of fractures.
Yes. Oh, well, a fracture is a broken bone.
Yeah. That's what, right. I couldn't even tell. I couldn't even guess.
433.
Ha!
That's just.
He needed to sell out those stadiums for health insurance.
I don't know. That's just crazy. All right. Now,
you know, Taylor Swift made over $1 billion on her North American tour.
$1 billion? Wow.
Yeah. Billion. She just gave all of her truck drivers $100,000 bonuses, each of them.
Wow.
Yeah. She shelled out $5 million for the bonuses to the truck drivers.
Wow. That's just crazy. All right, another record that he has. Yeah, how many buses do you think he was able to jump over? He did it at Kings Island in Cincinnati, Ohio. For those keeping track, Kings Island is where that Brady Bunch episode took place when they went to, that's one of my favorite Brady Bunch episodes. Have you seen that one? Where they go to Kings Island and they misplace a Mike is there in order to, do an architect deal. And he has his blueprints in a poster holder or whatever it is. And he and Jan get theirs mixed up. And when he comes to present it at the, at his meeting, he pulls out Yogi Bear poster instead. So they have to get it there quickly. And they run across the park and they basically, they split up trying to find it, and they're able to find it. And they have to, they have a relay race. Jan and Marsha are running with it, and then they pass it off to Bobby and Cindy, and then they pass it off to Peter and Greg, and then they pass it off to, I mean, they even get Alice to run across, the whole thing. It's a fun episode. The trivia that I remember this is Kings Island had just opened up like a year or two before, and the day that they filmed, all the people were really pissed off because they kept letting the Bradys cut the line in order to film all the shots that they needed to do. So people were cursing out the Bradys.
Ah.
So yes, Kings Island. Sorry. I got off on a little bit of a tangent there. Kings Island. How many
buses?
No, not school buses. Greyhounds. Greyhound buses.
Greyhound buses. So it was 19 cars he was able to jump.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do the math, 14 or 15?
14. Perfect.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great, Mark. 14. And that lasted for how many years?
14.
24.
Right.
And Bubba Blackwell did it in 1999 with 15.
Wow. Bubba Blackwell's a beast.
Apparently. Well, apparently.
Who's Bubba Blackwell?
I have absolutely no idea. No clue. He also helped most of the this Kings Island event had the highest viewer rating in history of ABC's World of Sports.
Wow.
Yeah. And Evel Knievel featured in 7 of the 10 highest rated episodes of that show, ABC's World of Sports.
That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Bubba Blackwell is still alive.
Oh, wow. Okay, it makes sense.
Dang.
And
that's a beast.
Yeah. Now here's another thing. You've heard the phrase jump the shark, right?
Yeah.
Okay, where they talk about for TV shows.
Happy Days.
Happy Days, that's right. So Evel Knievel actually was supposed to jump a tank of live sharks on January 31st, 1977. But during the rehearsal, he lost control of the motorcycle and he crashed into a cameraman and broke his arms.
Oh.
So he actually caused eye damage to the cameraman.
And the thing probably bounced back and hit him.
Yeah. And apparently, you know, he was so upset that it took 20 years for that footage to be used somewhere that people could see it. And in that same year, so Happy Days decided that you know, they would have Fonzie do a similar trick on water skis, you know, and that's where we all know of the phrase jump the shark.
Hmm.
So you see, Evel Knievel created the idea that TV shows can jump the shark.
And then wipe out cameramen.
That's right. The cameraman turns out that he was okay in the end. He didn't lose his eyesight or anything like that. So all is for the best. But yeah.
He's got a, hope he got a fat paycheck.
Probably Evel Knievel, you know, gave him a little bit of money here on the side. Who knows?
Yeah.
Right. So, okay, back to Die Hard 2. So John crawls over to the gun and pulls out the magazine and looks at it and he goes, oh, Jesus Christ. And it's great the way that they do this, that we actually see that John has figured something out, but he isn't telling the viewers yet what we're seeing.
We blanks. Know that he doesn't do that.
No. He goes, oh crap, blanks. You know, but he does have a quizzical look on his face, like he's trying to figure out why they would do it. You know, so it's a good thing they don't have a little bit of time to try and figure it out. You know, and he's got snow on his jacket too. And on his face.
Finally.
And on his face.
Yeah, they're actually dropping the snow on him here. If it was Samuel Jackson, he would be like, mother effer. Like, that's what he would say if he saw those bullets.
That's true. And the funniest thing, and I can't figure this out, is that John is now holding in his hand two clips. One that has blue and one that has red. Where did he get the one with the red?
Wait, wasn't that attached to it? Didn't they have two clips attached to each other?
No, it was two blue clips.
Oh.
It's the blue clips are taped together and then the red clips are taped together.
So did you finally find a mistake?
It looks like it. But it's very strange. Yeah. Like where, because we never see him pull it out somewhere. We see him pull the blue clips out of the gun and he's looking at it. And then there's a close up of John. And then in the next shot, we see John holding two clips in his hand and one of them is red and one of them is blue.
Did he have one in his jacket that he grabbed from somebody?
It's possible, but we don't
remember see him. When he shot the guy, he grabbed his,
grabbed
his gun. So then he probably maybe put something in there in his jacket.
It's possible, but we don't see him pull it out. That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
miraculously is in his hand.
It's just there. Yeah.
Maybe John McClane is a magician. You know, we didn't see what was up his sleeves.
I mean, he works in pretty good magic and Die Hard. He's good with tape.
That's true.
He taped it.
That's right. John knows tape.
He does know tape. Oh, man.
Yeah. And you know, the shot basically ends with a close-up of John getting up. And it's funny how he uses the gun to, like, lift himself up. You know, as like a cane type of thing for him to start walking and stuff like that.
Is there another actor out there who does a better pain face?
Than Bruce Willis? Hmm.
like Pierce Brosnan does not have a good pain face. He's like, Arnold, I don't know if I've seen him do pain face much. Stallone might do a good pain face. Jackie Chan does a good one because he was always in pain because he was always getting hurt.
That's true. His wasn't fake pain. His was real pain.
Yeah.
You know, Jackie Chan is like Evel Knievel. You know, he really breaks his bones.
Buster Keaton. Was Buster Keaton the prototype for Evel Knievel?
Maybe.
He did some insane stunts. Have you ever watched a side-by-side of Buster Keaton and Jackie Chan? Jackie Chan like recreates so many of his best stunts. It's a fun video to watch.
Oh, really?
Keaton was a hero. Really cool. Yeah, if you ever watch, just do Buster Keaton, Jackie Chan side-by-side. And Jackie recreates a lot of the stunts, and it's fun.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Then we're back in the control tower, and we get a shot of Trudeau. Trudeau.
Tower.
Yeah, Trudeau's up there. And basically, you know, it makes you wonder why, at this point, Stewart then contacts the tower. And we hear him on the speaker saying, "Attention tower, attention Dulles tower. This is Colonel Stewart. Is our plane prepared?" And then Trudeau responds and says, "It is. It's in Hangar 11. It's the most remote building we got. We're on our way. Have a ground crew there to confirm the condition of the plane." And first of all, it's very funny that he wants a ground crew, that he's even asking for it, because, you know, that's a perfect situation for them to bring in, you know, anti-terrorist, you know, guys that are going to be pretending to be real ground crew. So it's just very strange that
and they know that these guys can't hit anything. So, I mean, any type of counter. Well, no, they can only shoot people when it's not McClane. I guess. So, yeah, they're in trouble. Never mind.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah. No, but it's just a very strange request, you know. And I love that as Stewart is doing it, he's looking at a map, and then he, like, sticks that map in his jacket pocket, you know, basically trying to figure out where he needs to go or where Hangar 11 is. Maybe that's what he's checking.
Maybe. I mean, listen, this is pre-GPS. That's a big airport.
That's true.
A lot of woods around this airport, by the way.
Yes, that's true. I wonder if there really is that many trees around Dulles. Because that's pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
So, I don't think so. Yeah, probably not.
And trucks just driving right through it.
That's true also. And then we get a shot of Grant and his men listening in on this conversation. Again, how are they on that frequency? You know, they're going to know what frequency Stewart is going to contact, you know, the control tower on.
Well, they know a tower is on, so they know that they'll eventually. So they've been talking to tower.
Please, true, but Telford's job is not to be listening in on the tower. You know, he's trying to find other stuff, I guess. I don't know.
But you want it there. Have one person with it on, just to know.
Okay.
Have Mitchell keep that frequency. Or Kenneth.
Yes, definitely Kenneth. Keep the frequency. And then Grant goes, "Do you believe the balls in the son of a bitch, Colonel?" And then he takes the radio to respond and goes, "Colonel, you're quite capable of confirming it yourself. Now, please, don't ask us to gift wrap potential hostages for you." I've always hated the next line. Stewart then goes, "Major Grant, isn't it? Hello." These guys were apparently, you know, serving together for years.
Yeah.
You know, for him to respond as if he's, you know, who is this? Oh, is this Major Grant? I don't know. Who are you? I mean, it goes back to the fact that John actually knew that the two of them know each other.
Yeah,
you know, that Grant and so, you know, it's just very strange that he pretends at this point not to know who Grant is at first. So I don't
Kenneth?
Know.
That'd be funny if it was that.
That's right. And then Grant responds, "If you remember me, Colonel, then you remember I know the drill as well as you do. Check out your own plane." You know, this is when you know what's going to happen in this movie. So it's very comical, this entire all these theatrics. You know, I always wish that I could, you know, go back and see movies for the first time to see, to try and remember what my reaction is for certain things that I didn't know at the time. Like, how do people react when they first see this scene, thinking that Grant is a good guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's not theatrics of what he's doing when you think that he's on the side of right. But once you know what he's doing, it's very hard to unhear the theatrical tone in his speech.
Yeah, they're hamming it up.
Yes.
But we don't know that, though.
Correct. But that's what I'm saying. It's hard to put yourself in that position.
But why else even have this guy here? Unless you're going to The Rock him. Remember the team from The Rock with Michael Biehn? And
yeah.
They all just get wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you do that with them. This is a crazy plan movie, Rob.
Oh, or
should
for
I say
sure.
Stuntman Rob? This plan is nuts. We don't have to go into it, but geez Louise. There's a lot. Like, there's a lot of work going on here. And a lot of theatrics.
That's right. And we never really figure out their idea for how they're going to completely get away and that nobody's gonna have to run after them. You know. Hans Gruber had a plan that everyone will think they're dead and that's it. Here, mm-hmm. everyone will know that these people were traitors and did what they did, and now they're, you know, on some tropical island. And that's it. But we don't know where they are, and we're not going to be able to get to them.
It's so many movies, though. I mean, that's Con Air. That's a lot of movies. Like, we're going to be on a non-extradition island. It's going to get boring pretty quick.
Yeah.
If you're wanted by the entire... Like, anywhere, like, you can never go back to the States. You're just going to be on an island for the rest of your life. Like, 100 of you. Mercenaries. I mean, I guess you could go work for other mercenaries.
Well, then you can't, because you can't leave.
I want a movie about that. People who pull off the biggest heist ever, and everyone knows who it is, but they end up on a non-extradition island. And they're just bored. And, they, like, these horrifyingly bad criminals open up a bar, and they have to, like, run a restaurant. that's a movie I want.
Okay, that makes sense. The question is whether it'll be a boring movie or not. You know,
isn't that
more or less what the Expendables is? Come on.
No, but there's no action. It's just them. Like, there's 30 of us here. We killed hundreds, because of plane crashes and everything. Like, we're murderers. We killed a lot of people, and now we're on this island, and we can't get sent away. So the islanders don't like them. They're bored. They can't board a plane. So, like, I guess we'll start a legitimate business, like a fish and chip shop. And it just fails miserably. And then they have to learn how to become central, like a core part of the community and become good again and give out free tacos. That's the movie.
Well, I'll leave that to you. You can write that script.
Oh, it's already done. I just wrote it.
Oh, okay. But as long as they have free tacos, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's the kicker here.
Everyone wants free tacos.
Exactly. And, you know, it's just funny watching the theatrics here. And we see a shot of Stuart basically smiling, and he smirks at Khan. You know, during this conversation, because they're the only two people who really know what's going on. Do you think Esperanza knows at this point that the guys in blue light are with them? Or not yet?
Because later on when he sees it, he's like, oh.
That's right. So he still thinks that, you know, it's funny that they're keeping him in the dark.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's onto it, but he doesn't want to admit it yet. But yeah, because he seems quite happy when he finds out.
Right.
So yeah.
It's true. And then Grant slams the intercom onto the radio, and then turns to all his men and goes, "We move out in 5 minutes. Flak jackets for everybody. Body armor for the assault team. Night scopes." And then he gets cut off.
Yep.
You know. So again, a lot of theatrics here. Some of it works. Some of it doesn't work. You know. But I like how they do it though.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Okay, you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
Let's script it up.
All right. Actually, I want to mention one last thing here that you know, not only you mentioned before that this plan is just really crazy and stuff like that, but not only do they need to plan the real stuff, they need to plan the fake stuff. You know, like they need to plan what they're going to do to pretend that they're on the side of right. You know, like even for him to make this comment right now, telling all his men, you know, get ready in 5 minutes and flak jackets and body armor and all that stuff. You know, it's just, you know, this is all theatrics just for who? I mean, Carmine isn't next to them right here. I think tomorrow maybe he'll tell Carmine what to do. But
they have one person with them.
That's right. It's all to fake out Telford. That's it. You know, it's like, how, what do we need to do in order to fake out Rebecca De Mornay's husband? You know, let's figure that out. That's what it comes down to. All right, so the script actually has some interesting changes here also. And it says, John paws through the snow, looking for the assault rifle and finds it. The stock broken. McLean pulls off the clip. He peels off a round into his hand, then another. There's paper weighed where brass should meet lead. Blanks. Reeling, he rummages in the snow, finds one of the soldiers' backpacks. More clips inside. First clip has live ammo. Second clip, blanks. Camera pushes in on McLean until he looks at the red-blue tape and makes the connection. Oh, my God. And gets to his feet and runs. So, I mean, I like the way they do it in the movie because they're trying to hold off the reveal. You know, it's going to take them a few more days to give off this reveal. But, you know, in the script, the reveal happens right there. And I think it's more effective, the reveal in the movie, than the one that they use here in the script. Because in the script,
it's a good reveal.
They're telling us outright. But in the movie, it's him shooting Lorenzo, which we'll get into next week about why John should probably be dead. But whatever, that's a separate problem. Mm-hmm. And then Stuart, you know, talks about, you know, whether the plane is prepared. And then at one point, he says, we're on our way. If there's another attempt to stop us like the one you just made, I will fire several Stinger missiles into your terminal. Do I make myself clear? And then Trudeau says, quite clear. Good. Please have a ground crew there to confirm the plane's condition. You know, and then it says the army trucks have parked by the still intact church garage. In the background, firefighters spray down the smoking ruins of the church. Grant uses the field radio Telford has set up in the back of the truck. And then basically the conversation continues. It's the same. Because remember, the church blew up in the script, which, you know, would have been nice to see. But
Save money.
That's what they were doing, saving money. All right. So every Thursday, we have a segment called Aviation Thursday, where my guests will give their top five movies related to aviation. It could be something that happens in an airport, something that happens on an airplane in space, something like that. So, Mark, what have you got for us? Start with your number five and work your way up.
I watched a movie recently called Blood Red Sky. I wanted to put it at number five. It's about vampires on a plane. And so there's a plane, and eventually it lands. But the whole thing is about a vampire outbreak happens on a plane with a bunch of terrorists. And so it's just a cool vampire. It's like, it's just vampires on a plane. And then, like, I don't want to give away a lot, but it's just a fun claustrophobic horror film that I did a lot.
I got to tell you, you were not the first person to list that movie. It's fun. Top five. Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. And then four is Hot Shots. It's one of my all-time favorite comedies. Charlie Sheen is perfection. There's a scene where an airplane goes upside down and all the, like, tchotchkes from the airplane fly and, like, hit the window of, or like the window of the cockpit, I guess, like just all the crap. Just, that's a hilarious movie. I think Hot Shots is just one of the funniest movies I can think of. I would get fired if I didn't bring this up, but Con Air is my number three.
I think Jay's gonna fire you for putting it at number three.
Jay Clewitt and I dedicated way too many episodes to it, but it was still a lot of fun. Number two is Snakes on a Plane. It was directed by David R. Ellis, who is a second unit director of Deep Blue Sea, and it stars Samuel L. Jackson on a plane with poisonous snakes. Famously got like the R-rated cut. It was supposed to be the next best big thing, according to the internet. It wasn't really, but it's still just a fun concept with Sam Jackson fighting snakes on a plane.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. And number one, not overall, but I watched it this year, and it's called Plane, and it stars Gerard Butler and Mike Coulter, and it is such a refreshing blast of like 1990s, 1980s action film. Jerry Butler's super chill in it. Mike Coulter's just a legit like killer in it. The plane scenes are really stressful. The shootouts are stressful. It's a very simple, plotted film with likable, smart characters and a lot of tension. I mean, this movie hits above its weight. It's a very fun, very economical, straightforward action film. Now, I'm not saying it's not Die Hard, but it's so refreshing and just how it gets from point A to point B to point C that it's like it's in my top five of 2023. Like, my wife and I love it. It's just a fun movie called Plane. So that's my number one.
All right. Very cool. All right. So, Mark, you want to once again tell people where they can find you?
Yeah. Movies, Films, and Flicks. Movies, Films, and FLIX. And then Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. And then just look for me on social for all those places.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And you can find me on Twitter. So, Mark, you feel like coming back in tomorrow to see what happens with these guys that are going to be putting on flak jackets and body armor?
My name is Tower, Stuntman Rob. You got to call me Tower.
Okay. So, Tower, would you like to come back tomorrow?
Look at the balls on this guy. Look at you asking this. Yeah, of course. I'll be back. But I need someone to check my mic.
All right. No problem. But as long as you promise not to use them as hostages, how's that? Yeah. I'll send the guy over if you promise.
I won't do it again.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,